Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101-night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
Let's have a nice cup of TRE in the afternoon with Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is Colin Davidson and Mark Carruthers. Together they have authored a new book, 12 Paintings, which is an intimate and compelling exploration of the life and work of internationally acclaimed Irish artist Colin Davidson. His portrait sitters include Brad Pitt, Ed Sheeran, Liam Neeson, Sir Kenneth Branagh, Mark Knopfler and Seamus Heaney. Mark Carruthers, as well as being a good friend of Colin's, is one of Northern Ireland's best known and respected broadcasters. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Hi, Hannah.
Hello, Hannah.
Hi. Thanks both of you for being on the programme. So, Mark, let's start with you. Tell us how this book came about.
Well, I suppose it came about after, 15 years of friendship and a working relationship between Colin and myself. We got to know each other way back at the beginning of the series of portraits that Colin was painting that you just referred to. I was the chair of the Lyric Theatre in Belfast, which is the main producing theatre in Northern Ireland. And we knocked the old theatre down, raised a lot of money to build a brand new theatre. And we decided that we needed to populate that new building with some public art. And after a bit of a complicated process, we ended up entering into a relationship with Colin to commission, you could say, some portraits of people who were coming in through the theatre at that time. And that's everybody from Seamus Heaney, Liam Neeson, Michael Longley, as you said, Kenneth Branagh, a whole raft of people who were in and around the theatre. And Colin got to meet them, got to paint them. They sat for him, and those paintings then hung in the theatre at that time and still hang in the theatre. And we ended up talking about that relationship and Colin's work, because it extends way beyond portraits, in various arts festivals and literary festivals and so forth. And it really came to a point where I thought it's worth trying to write some of this stuff down, because there is maybe an audience for it beyond the people who simply turn up to these events. And so a few years ago, we started the process of working on the book. And it's really a mix of text, interviews that we have done, and a lot of the images from Colin's career. So it's just something that we as two friends have collaborated on. And Colin's a bit of a perfectionist. And I suppose I wanted to make sure that Colin had a platform to tell his story to as many people as possible. So we've chosen together, but he's had a lot to say about the images that are in there. And we think it charts, you know, a very interesting career. And a lot of people on this island would be very familiar with Colin's work. And we hope to introduce his work to audiences beyond these shores as well through the book. He already has considerable interest in Britain, big exhibition at the National Portrait Gallery last year, and obviously has had a number of exhibitions in America. So yeah, it's been an interesting process.
Yeah.
And we're glad to have got to this point, Hannah. That's all I can say.
Fantastic. So, Colin, can you tell us a bit about you and your background and how and when you realised that you could paint?
I think I realized that I had an interest in painting whenever my mother first put a crayon into my hands. I think I was probably about one, and probably my canvas was the wall of the hallway on the way up the stairs. But the thing about it is, whenever everybody else went outside to kick a ball about the street, I just continued to make things and paint and drew. And I think the whole way through my childhood, and indeed we talk about it in the book, where there was a eureka type where in a classroom, whenever I was about 8 years old, I realised that I made a drawing where I didn't quite know where it came from. And I suppose my career to date has really been about recreating that to an extent, because this shy kid who really didn't have a lot of confidence, that shy kid is still there now, could find a way to express himself and to, I suppose, gain a bit of confidence other than doing something like kick a ball about the street. And so, yeah, I mean, I went to art school in Belfast, and then I had about 9 years where I worked in graphic design and advertising. Always painted the whole way through that, and really thought that if I was destined to do anything truly original in my life and in my career, I didn't want to miss the chance. And I left my design and advertising career behind to solely focus on painting. And that was about 26 years ago. And I think the book kind of charts right the way from whenever I was in school through to right now, actually. And it's been fascinating to look back and to kind of through reasonably investigative probing from Mark, that, you know, we to discover things myself about my career and maybe why I did things that I wasn't aware of at the time.
Yeah. I'm interested to know what inspires you to paint a certain thing, you know, whether it's still life, a landscape or a portrait. What makes you decide to pick up the brush and start a new project?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not so much still life now, but certainly I think, Hannah, and it's not evading anything at all here, but I think the thing that gets me into my studio each day is simply to make a painting. And it's nothing more or nothing less than that. The human face is a vehicle through which to put paint on some cloth, and the Belfast landscape is the same, or the window reflections that I've done that are in the book, exactly the same as well. I have a fascination with human beings and what it means to be a human on this planet at this time. And I suppose the art, the music, the film, the theatre that really interests me is, those pieces, those works of art where it leaves the gaps for me to find myself in, where not everything is spelled out and where maybe I can learn something new about myself or about the world. And that's the realm in which I hope my own art sits, where it's not propaganda art. It's not telling anybody what they need to think, but it's simply representing something in a different way and causing us to pause and maybe question.
Yeah. And with regards to some of those big names who I mentioned at the start who have sat for you, how does that happen? You know, how do you get the likes of Brad Pitt and Ed Sheeran?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, as I've said, I'm in my comfort zone when I'm on my own here in the studio. And somehow that's all pinch me stuff. It really is. It's me being out of my depth, but yet very comfortable. It all started off whenever I bumped into an old friend called Peter Wilson in Belfast. Duke Special is his stage name or performing name, I suppose. And he had changed his look and he had this wonderful eye makeup and dreadlocks and quirky clothes, and something about his look just made me ask him if I could paint him. And bearing in mind I hadn't been a portrait painter before that, this was 2010, and I got round to making a painting of him 2010, and then there's this lovely little thread that works its way throughout my career where Duke introduced me to Glenn Hansard. Glenn introduced me to Roddy Doyle. I met Mark, and Mark introduced me, as he said, to Seamus Heaney and a lot of the Northern Irish and Irish cultural greats. And what happened then was, I mean, there was no commercial agenda to any of this. We're just making the paintings because I wanted to and felt a need to. And without really thinking, I was building up a body of work of a lot of people who were great and good on the island where I come from. And that then spread and people saw the work. I think the Brad Pitt painting came about because he saw the Glenn Hansard painting on the cover of an album. Also the Brian Kennedy painting that I did in the RA that year. And I simply got a call from an attorney in LA asking me if I would teach his client to paint. I originally said, no, I don't do it. But then the confidentiality agreement came in and I realised it was Brad Pitt. Difficult to say no to Brad Pitt. And then, I spent the summer of 2012 in London, teaching him to paint. And then that's where the portrait came from. So there's a lot, and that's the way a lot of things occur. I don't kind of push doors down. I don't very often ask people if they would sit for me, but there's just this lovely thread that runs through relationships, I think.
Yeah. And obviously slightly different with Brad, because you obviously spent more time with him teaching him to paint. But in general, if someone is sitting for you, how well do you get to know them? I mean, do you want them to primarily keep still so you can paint them, or do you have a chat? Do you feel like you're interviewing them a bit, or is that not what you're supposed to do?
Well, Hannah, I don't really have any agenda or any contrivance at the start of our time together, the encounter that we have. I suppose the sitting itself can be 2 to 3 hours. It can be a few of them, not just one. And I will make a lot of what I call shorthand drawings, really quick drawings of the person. The camera's there as well. And then I bring all that back to my studio and make the painting from there. So during that solid 2 to 3 hours, I think we're both slightly out of our depth to start off with. If you can imagine being one of two people in a room and the other person has his complete gaze and focus on you the whole time, it must be unnerving at the start. But soon we relax and we just talk about stuff. Sometimes it's about the person's career. Sometimes it's about their life, their family life. Sometimes it gets really very, very deep. And people have commented on it. It's like going to the shrink. But I don't contrive that.
No.
What I say that I'm looking for is a moment whenever the sitter is seemingly unaware of me being in the room. And that's kind of that happens after a period of time, whenever the sitter is just comfortable in their own thoughts. And very often we are quiet, and I'm quite happy to let the silence permeate the space and to kind of go with the flow, go with where the atmosphere takes us.
Yeah, that makes sense. You want them to feel comfortable. So if they're really chatty and wanting to chat, then that's obviously what makes them comfortable. But likewise, if they'd prefer to be quiet and are giving off the vibe that they don't want to answer loads of questions, then you don't ask them lots of questions, I suppose. You go by what they're giving you.
Yeah, I suppose there must be a certain sophistication which I've built up in reading and knowing, kind of having a sense of what is going to make the sitting work. Very often if it's in the person's home, quite a lot of the sittings take place here in my studio in County Down. But a lot of the time I travel, you know, I'm thinking about the portrait I did of the late Queen Elizabeth II. And I suppose, you know, that took place in the Yellow Drawing Room in Buckingham Palace. And, you know, she was clearly very much at home. She was clearly not out of her depth as well, because she'd sat for many portraits in the, whatever it was, 50 years before that. But she made me feel very, very comfortable. And I suppose it was her who had to more read me being out of my depth than anything else. I think the circumstances really, you know, the location, the circumstances really help to find the moment that I'm looking for. And you know what I think comes out in the book very much is that, you know, with each new portrait, I've probably made about 350 portraits in the last 16 years. You know, it's kind of, with each new portrait, it's like starting afresh. Whilst you kind of have a repertoire of what you know paint can do, you kind of don't know what it is that you're looking for with that particular person sitting in front of you until you see it. So it's just starting from scratch very often.
Yeah. And Mark, for you, putting this book together with Colin, because you know him so well and you've got a friendship, did that make the process easier or harder, would you say?
Well, I think easier. I mean, it wasn't an unpleasant process at all, I have to say. It was a collaboration from the outset. Once we agreed we were going to do it, we did it completely together. We had to put some sort of structure on it. And the idea of the 12 paintings is that we selected 12 pieces of Colin's work, and each of them is an entry point into a wider conversation about a particular aspect of his work. So as Colin said, the portraits in there are broken up into several chapters. There are some that deal with politicians. There's a chapter that deals with people in the music industry, people who were around the theatre at that time, poets, playwrights, actors. There's a section then on a silent testimony exhibition, which Colin did, which is a series of paintings, 18 paintings about people who are united by the impact the Troubles had on them. And that's the exhibition that took place in the National Portrait Gallery last year. And that's profoundly moving piece of work. And then there are the window paintings, there are the Belfast paintings, and then there's the 3D sculptural work, really, the sculptural paintings, I suppose you could call them. 3D paintings is what Colin refers to them as, which look like sculptures but are effectively made in paint. So there were different aspects of the book. Once we got that structure together, then the process was to do the interviews. And those weren't combative. I mean, in the world I work in is politics broadcasting, and as you could imagine, Hannah, in a place like Northern Ireland, that can be quite challenging on occasions. And you know, it's not for the faint-hearted, let's say. But this was a completely different project, and I wasn't holding Colin to account for anything. We were exploring different aspects of his work and engaging in a completely different way. I think that was a very positive experience for both of us, immensely enjoyable, but you know, hard work as well, because we did try to get to quite difficult places on occasions. I mean, for example, the last conversation is about, it's based on a self-portrait of Collins. So there's quite a lot of self-examination in that. What is it like to be an artist in the 21st century? How do you deal with all of the challenging issues that Colin tries to confront? You know, pleasurable, but challenging at the same time. And hopefully people will get something out of the book. I mean, the book's been beautifully produced by our publisher. The one thing I should say, just read it, we haven't touched on it yet, just for the benefit of people who maybe aren't familiar with Colin's work, and it's worth looking it up if they get a chance, is the scale of the paintings. And they're not just portraits, they're very large portraits. They're oversized portraits that are roughly 4 foot square. So, and just of heads. So, you know, they're oversized heads, and they have a huge impact on you when you see them. And Colin's great skill is to not just represent the individuals, but is to capture something of the essence of that person as well. And I think we've addressed that in the book, and I do think that's an interesting aspect of this project. There are many, many fine portrait painters out there, and they're very good, many of them, at capturing a likeness. Colin is very good at that as well. But then he goes a stage further and he gets in behind the facade of the individual, and he has an uncanny knack for getting an insight into the personality of that person. And that's where it becomes really, really interesting to try to discuss or try to work out how it is that Colin does that. And I think that's why people with his work so much. I'm sure, you know, you've seen yourself. It's very often comes down to the eyes in the painting. Yeah. You feel you can read something of the emotion of the person in looking at the painting. And that's what's very unusual about this work.
And Colin, have you made the portraits that size on purpose? Do you feel it gives you more freedom or allows you to see the person and the person viewing the painting in a better light or a more prominent light when it's that much bigger?
Yeah, I got to go back to 2010 whenever I made the painting of Duke that I told you about, the very first one. I lifted a canvas that I had got stretched for one of the window reflection paintings that I was doing at the time. And it just felt right to make Peter's head the size that I needed to make it. Because I think the repertoire that I'd built up was that I found with the paintings of the heads that I could bring everything I knew about paint at that time to one piece. So the flesh was landscape. The dreadlocks became the way that I would paint the trunks of trees. The background had a movement to it that I would build into the window reflections. And the eyes in particular, I treated those in exactly the same way as I treated the sheets of glass in the window reflections. So it kind of, I was painting something other than a face.
Yeah.
And I think that whenever we are looking at a painting, a portrait of somebody that is life size, we see it and we read it as a human face. Whenever it's much bigger than life size or much smaller than life size, it can offer it, it becomes something else. And I think I was aware of that actually where, you know, the face and the depiction of the face is an entry point to the painting. And the very fact that it's bigger than life size, it gives you a better opportunity to do that. The other thing as well is that all of my paintings, and that was a whim at the very start, that was a chance canvas that I brought to paint the very first one. All of my paintings have been that size since then. I sort of have this idea that everybody is an equal and everybody who I paint is an equal. We're all living, breathing human beings at the end of the day. And with our badges removed and our honours removed, that's what we are. And that, I suppose, is the democracy of having all of the paintings exactly the same size. So I got to blame the decision I made at the very start with the painting of Duke for them all being that exact size.
Yeah, nice. Well, if people want to get a copy of the book, it's a beautiful book. It's called 12 Paintings. It's available on our website, tre.radio. And it's by artist Colin Davidson and broadcaster Mark Carruthers, who we've been chatting with today. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.